All right, and it's usually at this point that kids, I invite you to exit the room. However, do you know what Sunday it is? It's a fifth Sunday. Some of you know exactly what that means. That means you are here with us. But what else that means is that typically, since you're here with us, which by the way is partly just to give a break to our Kid Connection crew, but also to remind you, kids, that you are not the church of tomorrow, you are the church today. You are just as much a part of this church as any of the adults that are sitting around you, whether you are 6 or 7 or 8, and the people around you are 60 or 70 or 80. You are just as much a part of our church as they are. And what I typically do on these fifth Sundays is I try and come up with a series that may involve a little bit more kid-friendly elements. Last year, if you remember, we worked through some clips from the movie Inside Out. Well, this year, we're going to take some clips from a different movie, and it's the movie Disney's Tangled. Came out in 2010. I am admittedly a fan of Disney princess movies. You don't have to be a 7-year-old girl to like Disney princess movies, I promise. This is probably my favorite Disney princess movie, although my favorite Disney princess is actually Belle. And I realize as I'm giving you these details, I should keep all of them to myself, probably. But this movie has so many great themes in it of love and sacrifice and discovery and life and grace. And so the series will be called Tangled Up in Grace. So there'll be one now, one in, I think, September, and then there's another fifth Sunday later in the year. So we'll be looking at some clips from that movie. And today we're going to be talking about how at the beginning of the movie, if you're not familiar with it at all, it's Disney's take on the story of Rapunzel, the princess who's locked in the tower, who has the extra long hair. And we're going to talk today about how she is in protective captivity. And I chose that phrase because it sounds like one we're familiar with that's actually good. Protective custody is when you are held somewhere for your own safety. And that's what Rapunzel's captor wants her to believe. But in reality, she's being held in protective captivity. So if you've never seen the movie before, or maybe if you have, I want to show you like a 4-minute clip from the very beginning to set up the whole idea behind this movie, how Rapunzel is born, what happens around her birth, and the circumstances that set the table for the movie to actually take place. So this is the first 4 minutes of the movie, told from the perspective of sort of her co-star in the movie, Flynn Rider, who is like her love interest and, you know, all the princessy stuff that goes along with that. And so listen to the opening of this movie from his perspective, the story of how we get to Rapunzel.
This is the story of how I died.
But don't worry, this is actually a very fun story, and the truth is, it isn't even mine. This is the story of a girl named Rapunzel. And it starts with the sun. Now, once upon a time, a single drop of sunlight fell from the heavens. And from this small drop of sun grew a magic golden flower. It had the ability to heal the sick and injured. Oh, you see that old woman over there? You might want to remember her. She's kind of important. Well, centuries passed, and a hop, skip, and a boat ride away, there grew a kingdom. The kingdom was ruled by a beloved king and queen. And the queen, well, she was about to have a baby. But she got sick. Really sick. She was running out of time, and that's when people usually start to look for a miracle. Or in this case, a magic golden flower. Ah, I told you she'd be important. You see, instead of sharing the sun's gift, this woman, Mother Gothel, hoarded its healing power and used it to keep herself young for hundreds of years. And all she had to do was sing a special song.
Flower, gleam and glow. Let your power shine. Make the clock. Bring back what once was mine. What once was mine.
All right, you get the gist. She sings to it, she turns young. Creepy, right?
We found it!
golden flower healed the queen. A healthy baby girl, a princess, was born with beautiful golden hair. I'll give you a hint. That's Rapunzel. To celebrate her birth, the king and queen launched a flying lantern into the sky. And for that one moment, everything was perfect. And then that moment ended. Stole the child, and just like that, gone. The kingdom searched and searched, but they could not find the princess. For deep within the forest, in a hidden tower, Gothel raised the child as her own. Gothel had found her new magic flower, but this time, she was determined to keep it hidden.
Can't I go outside?
The outside world is a dangerous place, filled with horrible, selfish people. You must stay here, where you're safe. Do you understand, Flower?
Yes, Mommy.
But the walls of that tower could not hide everything. Each year on her birthday, the king and queen released thousands of lanterns into the sky, in hope that one day, their lost princess would return.
Scripture talks a lot about us being people who are held in captivity. In captivity to sin. We read about it in John chapter 8, the very words of Jesus. Speaking to some Jewish people who have been listening to him and learning and eventually believing. We pick it up in verse 31. To the Jews who had believed in him, Jesus said, "If you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free." And they answered him, "We are Abraham's descendants. We have never been slaves of anyone. How can you say that we shall be set free?" Jesus replied, "Very truly I tell you, everyone who sins is a slave to sin. Now a slave has no permanent place in the family, but a son belongs to it forever. So if the Son sets you free, then you are free indeed." I find it interesting in this passage that Jesus is talking now to a group of people who already believe him. He's not trying to convince them to believe him. It says that they already do. And if you read John chapter 8, you'll find the things that he has been talking about that apparently they believe is that he is the light of the world, that he has a deep and intimate and powerful connection to the Father. So they've heard these things and chosen to believe. And yet Jesus does not want to leave them just at belief. He beckons them on toward more. Because, see, belief is not the end. Belief is the beginning. Belief is not a parking space. Belief is a gateway. I think many times within Christianity, we have either explicitly or implicitly said that the target is just to get to a place of belief, and then you can rest there. But according to what I read in the life of Jesus, belief is where people got to. And then what did he say to them? If you truly want to be my disciple, hold to my teachings. Belief is a beautiful and wonderful thing as a starting point, as a gateway to the fullness of who God wants us to be. For our purposes today, though, we want to focus on what happens next in the story. These believers that Jesus is talking to seem to be unaware of their captivity. They are held in some sort of invisible incarceration, if you will. And the statement that they make Well, we have never been enslaved. We are descendants of Abraham. I almost picture them as like a 2 or 3 year old who's just indignant. How dare you? I'm from the seed of Abraham. I've never been enslaved. Now let's pause for a second and talk about how that is absolutely fiction, right? I mean, the descendants of Abraham have been held in captivity in Egypt for generations, and then later in their story are taken away from their homeland and held captive by the Babylonians. And even now, as they speak these words, they're being held essentially as captives of the Roman Empire. They're not being true and honest about their own captivity. We may look at them and shake our heads, but I wonder, do we often do the same thing personally that they are doing with themselves as a whole? Do we look at our past places and times and seasons of slavery, times and places and seasons where we sort of lost control of our own lives, of our own selves, and instead of dealing with them, we sort of deny them or diminish them and set them to the side? But Jesus is not actually talking about the history of the freedom of the Jewish people. Anyway, what is he talking about? He says that you are slaves to sin. Regardless of the past history of Israel, he says to them, everyone who sins is a slave to sin. And in that way, we're not unlike the story of Rapunzel in Tangled, because before we understand the grace of God, before we understand the weight of sin or the offer of salvation or the invitation into the kingdom life as a disciple, all we really know is to follow the leading of our own desires and accept the narratives that have been handed over to us. We follow our own urges and desires unchecked wherever they might lead us, because that's all that we know. Or we accept the narratives that have been handed to us about what is good and right and just and beautiful. And Rapunzel in her story was only able to accept the narrative that she had been handed because she still remained in captivity, in that place of incarceration, kept away from the truth in the world. But Jesus follows up this accusation of saying, if you sin, you are a slave to sin, with some other news, some better news. We might even call it the good news, because the Son can set you free. Slavery to sin and incarceration in iniquity is not something that you and I can break out of or away from ourselves. We need someone from the outside to set us free. I think it's true that for humans in general, and even Christians specifically, we spend a large amount of time and energy trying to free ourselves from our own slavery to sin. Now, that's not to say that there aren't good things that we can do. There are spiritually forming things that we can do in order to grow as children of God and disciples of Jesus. But ultimately, the shackles and the chains of sin can only be broken by someone greater than ourselves. And Jesus Christ is the one who offers to break the power of sin and darkness, to loose us from those chains. But honestly, sometimes it's a little tempting to stay in captivity. Because freedom is certainly an attractive thing, but it's also a little bit of a scary and intimidating thing at the same time. Rapunzel is wanting to be free from that captivity that she's in, but outside of her tower, she doesn't know what might happen. I now have a teenage person in my household, and it reminds me sometimes of being a teenager myself and those first few years of teenagerdom, when you start to express and experience larger amounts of freedom. And I remember that being a very exciting time, but also a little bit of a nervous time, because it's like, I now get to be and do who I want to be and do, but that means I have to also figure out who I am and what I want to do in a world where there are many influences telling me who I should be and what I should do. Sometimes it's easier to just stay in captivity. If you're familiar with the phrase, the devil you know, sometimes it's easier to stay in the patterns that you know, even if they're unhealthy. Even if they're patterns of sin, they're at least what you are familiar with. And sometimes the voice of the enemy of your soul will whisper in your ear and try and convince you that it's easier just to stay. Yeah, there might be freedom out there, but that freedom comes with a cost, comes with a price, comes with a little bit of built-in figuring it out and maybe even failing along the way. There's another clip, a song that Mother Gothel sings to Rapunzel that sort of tries to keep her in captivity. Because ultimately in the story, Rapunzel turns 18 and it's her birthday and she wants to travel to where the lights are. She's drawn to the light and the beauty that those lanterns in the sky show to her. And so at her 18th birthday, she is trying to get the courage to ask to leave the tower, to go see the lights. And her friend Pascal, the lizard or iguana, no, what's the thing that changes colors? Chameleon. The chameleon is trying to usher her in. And yeah, do it. Ask to walk out in freedom. So listen to the words of this song and think about the way that our enemy whispers into our ears that maybe it's just easier sometimes, maybe even safer, to just stay within the familiarity of captivity. Go ahead and click it one more time. Maybe.
I want to see the floating lights.
What?
Oh, well, I was hoping you would take me to see the floating lights.
Oh, you mean the stars.
That's the thing. I've charted stars, and they're always constant. But these? They appear every year on my birthday, Mother. Only on my birthday. And I can't help but feel like they're meant for me. I need to see them, Mother. And not just from my window, in person. I have to know what they are.
You want to go outside? Why, Rapunzel? Look at you, as fragile as a flower. Still a little sapling, just a sprout. You know why we stay up in this tower.
I know, but...
That's right, to keep you safe and sound, dear. Guess I always knew this day was coming. Knew that soon you'd want to leave the nest. Soon, but not yet.
But
shh, trust me, pet. Mother knows best. Mother knows best. Listen to your mother. It's a scary world out there. Mother knows best. One way or another, something will go wrong, I swear. Ruffians, thugs, poison ivy, quicksand, cannibals and snakes, the plague.
No!
Yes!
But also large bugs, men with pointy teeth, and
stop no more, you'll just upset me. Mother's right here.
Mother will protect you. Darling, here's what I suggest. Skip the drama, stay with Mama. Mother knows best. Mother knows best. Take it from your mumsy. On your own, you won't survive. Sloppy, underdressed, immature, clumsy, please, they'll eat you up alive. Gullible, naive, positively grubby, ditzy and a bit, well, vague. Plus, I believe, getting kind of chubby. I'm just saying, 'cause I love you. Mother understands. Mother's here to help you. All I have is one request. Rapunzel?
Yes?
Don't ever ask to leave this tower again.
Yes, Mother.
Oh, I love you very much, dear.
I love you more.
I love you most.
Don't forget it. You regret it. Mother knows best.
The enemy of your soul wants to keep you captive to the familiarity of the patterns of sin, to avoid you reaching, knowing, and enjoying the freshness that the freedom of God can provide in your life. But Jesus allows us to break free from those chains of slavery to sin. But when we do, we also have to continue to be on guard against the sin that can trip us up. We read about it in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1. Let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. God has a race marked out for each one of us. But the sin that once imprisoned us can still trip us up, can entangle us, and can hinder us from that calling that God has for each of us in the race that is marked out for us. In this passage, the idea of a race is obviously some sort of athletic competition. There's a race marked out for you, so run it well. Maybe think of some of the other ways that we can understand athletic metaphors for this idea of being tripped up or being encumbered in trying to play some sort of game. I know that the NBA basketball season is now complete, and I know that the Cleveland Cavaliers had a slight dip in their performance this year after losing a significant free agent. But I am remembering now, as I'm reading this passage, that if you've watched an NBA basketball game, when the players are on the bench and not participating, they tend to wear some extra layers. They'll put on some sort of long sleeve t-shirt, which I remember playing basketball in high school, and the idea of coming off the court a sweaty hot mess and putting more clothing on doesn't sound appealing to me at all. But then they would also put on the breakaway pants, and they would sit there with those things on while they're on the bench. Which, side note, I remember being a junior high kid and thinking, those breakaway pants are awesome. It's like wearing clothing that's also a gadget of some kind, right? And I remember at one point in time, I did acquire a pair of breakaway pants because I was so fixated on them. But then I came to realize that they're great if you're wearing basketball shorts underneath the breakaway pants. But if you're not, every little area between a snap leaves you a little bit more exposed than you would actually like to be. Regardless, when the NBA players go back in, they take off the long sleeve shirt, they tear away the tearaway pants. Why? Because those things would encroach upon their ability to play the game well, would entangle them from doing the best that they can do. The Greek culture that this passage is situated in actually had athletes doing similar things at the Olympic Games, but they took it to what we might call another level, because the Olympic athletes at the time, when it came time for them to run their race, they would take off not just their outer clothing, but all their clothing. I mean, that for a time, they would leave their loincloths on, but then there were some racers who eventually had loincloths that were not quite tightly tied enough, and they ended up tripping on their loincloths. So eventually, these Olympic athletic racers would race as nature intended, if you will, right? By the way, any of you guys still go to the gym? If you visit the gym every now and then, in my digging to find some of this information, I found out, do you know the word gymnasium, what that comes from? It's actually from the Greek, and it means naked exercise. So try to not think about that next time you go to the gym. You're welcome. I'm here to ruin things for you. The highest profile cyclists and swimmers and triathletes go a step further, because for the men, any exposed skin, like their legs that has hair on it, they shave it all down, because there might be some extra drag in the water and the wind that will hold them back, because they want to do the race as well as they can, not being entangled or encumbered. I thought maybe it would be helpful to have a visual of this, and since we have some kids here, I want to have some kids come up and help. Cameron, you want to come help me? Are you awake? Great. And then Allison, we talked about this. Want to come up and help me now? Sure you do. Fantastic. So here's what we're going to do. You guys are going to race. Sound good? Are you ready? Okay, well, you look like a princess, so you're in good shape. So, but we're not going to run, because I don't want to advocate for running. No, yeah. So we're going to see who can walk the fastest from here. And you guys, so come down here with me. So you're going to go this way, all the way to that back door on that side and touch it, and then come back. And you're going to go that way and touch that door all the way in the back and then come back. You got it? Do you think you can win? Do you think you can win? Maybe. Okay, great. I'll take that as a vote of confidence. Okay. Are you ready? Set? Go! Quickly. Fast walking. Oh, yeah. Very good. Very good. I'm actually impressed that they are walking. Because my assumption was that the competitive spirit would kick in. Oh, it's going to be a tight one. It's coming down to the wire. They're staring each other down from across the room. Who's going to hit my hand first? Oh, Cameron, by. Okay, now don't go anywhere. You did really, really, really well. We're going to redo it because now that you know the path, it's probably going to be a little bit easier if you know where you're going. But I do have one more thing I need to bring out. And Cameron, since you did so well the first time, you're going to get to use this. So we're going to do the same race again. How do you feel about that? Do you know what that is?
I can pick up one of those.
Yeah, it's a weight. That's a 20-pound dumbbell. So you're going to hold on to that. And yes, that is tied with a speaker cable because we established last week I'm not a handyman, I'm a nerd, and I didn't have anything strong enough in my garage but a speaker cable. So same race, except you have to drag that along with you. Are you still confident you can win? Yes? Wow, fantastic. Do you feel better this time? You do? Okay. Ready?
Yes.
Set? Go! Come on, Cameron, you can do this. We all believe in you. Allison, don't look back. It's going to slow you down. Oh, you did it. I know. That's impressive. All right. You can go back to where you're sitting. Thank you very much. Cameron, I'm impressed that you made it that close because 20 pounds is a lot for me. So you are each called to run a race that God has marked out for you. However, when we allow the patterns of sin that once held us captive to re-enter our lives, we might still be striving toward the calling of God and the race he's marked out for us, but we do so with added difficulty, added burden, added trip hazards. We do so encumbered. And that's why the warning, the admonition is there in Hebrews chapter 12. Throw off everything that hinders or the sin that entangles. Because, my friends, you are meant to run a race and to run it well. Don't allow the sin that used to hold you captive to trip you up in the race God has marked out for you. Jesus talks a lot about freedom in his ministry. As a matter of fact, his ministry is just beginning in Luke chapter 4. The passage I'm going to read in a moment happens right after he is tested in preparation in the wilderness, and then right before the beginning of his teaching, preaching, and healing ministry. So this passage in Luke 4 is sort of the pivot point, the opening of Jesus' ministry, the proclamation of the beginning of the ministry of Jesus. So we read these words in Luke chapter 4, starting in verse 14. Jesus returned to Galilee in the power of the Spirit, and news about him spread through the whole countryside. He was teaching in their synagogue, and everyone praised him. Then he went to Nazareth, his hometown, where he'd been brought up. And on the Sabbath day, he went into the synagogue, as was his custom. He stood up to read, and the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. Unrolling it, he found the place where it's written, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners, and recovery of sight for the blind, and to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Then he rolled up the scroll, gave it back to the attendant, and sat down. And the eyes of everyone in the synagogue were fastened on him. And he began by saying to them, "Today this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing." This is the proclamation of the beginning of Jesus' ministry. And it's an emancipation proclamation because right in the middle of it, we find the theme of freedom. Freedom for the prisoners and freedom for the oppressed. Now, in some ways, the freedom for prisoners couldn't be literal. Because if you look, even during Jesus' ministry and at the earliest followers, I mean, John the Baptist, my goodness, he went to prison because of the testimony in the ministry of Jesus. Those first followers, the disciples of Jesus, many of them, most of them, were imprisoned or worse. So what kind of imprisonment and freedom is Jesus talking about? I think it's the one similar to what we read in John 8 when Jesus said, "When you sin, you are a slave to sin, but you can be set free." Although when Jesus spoke in that situation in his hometown synagogue and he talked about this kind of freedom, I have a hunch that the people who were listening intently probably thought about that freedom, well, but that's for those people out there. I think there's a tendency by us religious folks to believe that we don't really need set free from anything anymore. And I want to break that dream apart for you. I think that us religious folks need freedom just as much as anyone outside of the walls of a worshiping community. Actually, I think sometimes we need it even more. So Jesus spoke to them about the freedom that they could have. And then finally, we read about our former enslavement to sin in Romans chapter 6, just one verse of Romans 6. We read there Paul's letter to the Roman church. He says, "But thanks be to God that though you used to be slaves to sin, you have come to obey from your heart the pattern of teaching that has now claimed your allegiance." If you read the rest of Romans 6, Paul's talking about the fact that the death and the resurrection of Christ enables us, invites us into a new life to be free from the captivity of sin. And when we do so, when we step into the offer of salvation that Jesus gives to us, step into his kingdom life, we are set free from being slaves to sin. But Paul says, and at that point, you change your allegiance. I read that phrase this week and it really struck me that there is now a pattern of teaching that has claimed your allegiance. He was essentially saying when you were a slave to sin, whether you knew it or not, you had an allegiance to that. But when you are set free from the slavery of sin, you have a new allegiance. And of course, it being the Sunday before Independence Day, I was already thinking about Independence Day and fireworks and Frankfurters and flags and family and all the things that go along with it. And of course, that made me think about our own pledge of allegiance. So I did some research just to get some history on it, and I won't bore you with everything that I found because this is one of those rabbit trails that I ended up going down. But the current version that's still used today was published in 1892 and was accompanied by a flag-raising ceremony across the schools of the nation to boost patriotism at the time, which was thought to be waning because the Civil War had been so long ago, and so it was an effort to boost patriotism. The author of the version that we still use today, Francis Bellamy, though, incidentally, I found out this about him, this combination of things. He was a Baptist minister, a socialist, a champion of public school education for all children, and an advocate for restricting U.S. citizenship by excluding inferior races of immigrants. So kind of a mixed bag there for that guy, right? Some of the people that are behind the things that we still utilize greatly to the day. We realize some of their backstories. But what I realized is that pledge is intended to be a delineation of allegiance. Allegiance to this thing over these other things. And during the Cold War, 1954, the phrase "under God" was added again as a way to delineate, because we looked at ourselves as a God-fearing nation. We looked at the Soviet Union and its atheistic communism, and we wanted to say, we are not them. We have an allegiance to this and not those things. When Paul writes about an allegiance in Romans, he's talking about something that is much deeper than nations or governments. It's the allegiance of our hearts, the allegiance of our souls. Because while we are slaves to sin, even if we didn't realize it, we gave allegiance to either our own unchecked urges and desires at best, or the influence of our captor, the enemy of our soul, directing us where to go. We had an allegiance to something else before Christ set us free. But when Christ sets us free, we change allegiances. And where do we now find our allegiance? According to Romans 6, verse 17, in the pattern of the teaching that we see in Jesus Christ. I love how Paul brings to light the same thing that Jesus said. Remember John chapter 8, what did he tell them? Those who were believers, he said, if you hold to what? If you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples. And Paul echoes those thoughts by saying in Romans chapter 6, you were once slaves to sin, but now you've changed allegiance, and now your allegiance is to the pattern of teaching, that you in your heart have embraced this new pattern for life. And as we further unpack the story of Rapunzel and Tangled, that's what happens with her. She only knows this one pattern of life that's in this tower for 18 years being held in captivity. But eventually, she will be free. She will go and she will see these lights that she is drawn to because of their beauty and a little bit of mystery and a connection that she feels. But that's not the end of the story. That's the beginning of her understanding who she truly is. And when she starts to understand who she truly is, it changes absolutely everything. A whole new pattern of life emerges. So a few things to think about as we finish our time together here before we head outside and enjoy a cookout together. The first one is this. Do you believe Jesus? Because before you go anywhere else, you need to answer that question. Do you believe Jesus? Do you believe in the offer? Read John chapter 8. Do you believe he is the light of the world, drawing all men and women to himself? Do you believe that he was intimately connected to the Father, that his sacrificial death and his beautiful resurrection means something powerful, that he's the one that can set you free from the chains of slavery to sin? But if you do believe in Jesus, then you have to go to that next step. Are you holding to his teaching and growing as his disciple? Have you adopted, given allegiance to that pattern that we see in Jesus Christ? Secondly, today and this week, ask God to reveal to you if there are any patterns or burdens or entanglements of sin that continue to allow them to hinder your pursuit of his calling. You have a race to run. And in the race you're running, are you allowing the former things that held you captive to continue to trip you up or to hold you back? And lastly, to who or to what do you give your highest allegiance? What sorts of things or relationships capture your deepest passion, your fullest energy, your undivided attention, or your greatest devotion? Because, my friends, that's probably where your allegiance lies. And there are a lot of good things in this world that we can give our time and energy, our devotion to. But ultimately, our allegiance is to Jesus Christ above all things. So take a moment to pray, reflect. If you want to close your eyes or bow your head, you're welcome to do that. And we'll allow for a moment of silent reflection for us to spiritually digest some of the things that we have learned together. And then I'm going to close that time with a word of prayer.